Blog Talk Radio.
To be the man, you gotta beat the man.
You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the Matrix shit. Let's go hook him up!
By one of my co-hosts, Craig. What's going on, Craig? Hello, Craig. Can you hear me? Uh-oh. There may be a problem with the switchboard here. Let's see what's going on. Refresh. Okay, Craig is on hold. So, Craig, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, sorry. That was my switchboard froze up. And it
looks funny
because
I actually called in a few minutes beforehand and listened to the music and then I hung up on you.
I hung up on you or I put you on hold?
No, it just absolutely hung up on me, but it doesn't matter.
Oh, well then you got disconnected. It wasn't my fault then.
Sure. We'll say that.
Yeah. No, because as soon as the music started, I put you on the air. That was your crappy iPhone. You know, if you had a Droid, this wouldn't happen.
Oh yeah, I'm sure of it. Yeah, I'm sure of it. You do know Couture is not going to be joining us for about 20-30 minutes, right?
Yeah, I got that text, and yeah, way to go, Couture, Mr. Southern Wrestling expert fan, who could have really helped out with the Southern Wrestling guests we're about to have on.
Well, good news is that Bo is running a little bit late. He's making his way home through traffic, so we're actually going to be calling him in about 15 minutes as opposed to 2 minutes. So.
Oh, okay. Well, that's fine. But what the hell are we supposed to talk about till then?
Well, we can go into some news and then start with news, interview Bo in the middle of it, and finish up with some news.
I guess that'll work.
You guess that'll work. Well, it's going to have to work.
But first question, has the Negro left Seattle yet?
Of course. Of course, you're referring to Rodney. I don't refer to him in such terms. But, yes, he left Tuesday.
Uh-huh.
So it was sad to see him go. Hopefully he'll, move back up here.
As much as he seems to go up there, I guess it's almost like I could see that in his future.
Well, I hope so, because he's fun to have around.
Yeah.
Of course,
if I go to visit, I'll have someone to stay with, since, I'm sure I'll still be banned from your house.
Well, this time I don't have a young lady living here at home, so maybe I can put you up.
Cool.
I did have a young daughter at the time, and Lord knows what could happen when I'm head in San Antonio.
And you trust Rodney, I heard he's a pretty big player,
No, I'm sure. Well, we'll start off with a little bit of news here this evening. There was a TNA pay-per-view this last Sunday. I know a lot of you don't know that because, let's be honest, who watches TNA anymore? There was a Lethal Lockdown match, and Team Garrett Bischoff beat Team Eric Bischoff. So because of the stiffs, Eric Bischoff cannot use his name any longer.
I totally forgot that I actually could have watched this because I found a site where I could actually easily stream on my phone. And I could have watched it on the drive back from Houston. Speaking of which, I got a bone to pick with Matt Clary.
We'll do it some other time.
No, I'm gonna do it right now. We were there with a dead battery, lost. Had no idea where the hell I was going because that George Bush Airport in Houston sucks. And Matt Clary was nowhere to be found. When I finally did get ahead of him, he told me, I have no time. I'm going to a scout meeting. It's like, you know, luckily some nice guy and his wife gave us a jump. All I can say is Sunday was hell on earth, and it was because I was in the city of shitty, the shittiest city in Texas.
Well, I can't wait to visit there in November. The World Tag Team Championships, by the way, all these lockdown matches were contested inside of a steel cage. Magnus and Joe beat the Motor City Machine Guns. I was actually surprised to hear that result.
I'm not. When did the Motor City Machine Guns ever win a match?
They used to win quite a bit, but the thing is that they're returning and re-debuting because the one had been out for such a long time. So I figured they'd put him over.
When did they ever win, Craig? I mean, maybe they're winning shitty teams, but they never win the big one.
Devon defeated Robbie E. No shock there. It went about 3 minutes.
Why is this even in a cage?
They just all were in a cage. I don't know. Maybe they have problems taking them down.
I know, but they should actually think about eliminating some of the cage matches and maybe making, like, let's say there's 8 matches, have 4 in a cage and 4 not. I mean, what's the point of, like there's a reason Devon and Robbie E are in a cage. I mean,
because sleep a lot.
Other than the fact that they're lazy and they don't want to put it up and bring the cage up and down again. I mean, there's.
Well, when I was wrestling for Tim Flowers back in the day, they had a once-a-year thing. It was an all-cage match show. I think it was called Cage Wars. And basically the only reason they didn't take down the cage and put up the cage is because it was such a pain in the butt, so they just put it up the first match and left it until the main event.
Uh-huh.
I don't think that's the case with TNA, but you never know.
Yeah.
Speaking of a match that should never have been contested inside a steel cage, Gail Kim defeated Velvet Sky.
Yeah, it should have been in a cage because the cage took away and blocked some of the view. You know, you really want to get a closer view of these really hot chicks. And, you know, I'm sure it was a 5-star classic. I'm sure Velvet Sky was running the ropes better than Brian Alvarez ever could dream of. You know, if this
Speaking
one
of
matches
five...
the show that I regret seeing, it's this one.
Speaking of a 5-star classic, Crimson defeated Matt Morgan.
This thing is terrible, dude.
Yeah, he's no young. I was reading my notes. He's no good.
I bet both of them, actually.
Yeah, Crimson especially, though. I mean,
remember when Jim Cornette was on Wrestling Observer Live talking about how Matt Morgan is going to be rather than any WrestleMania how many years ago?
Well, even the smartest men in wrestling are wrong every so often.
Yeah. I wonder, you know what's funny is, like, you know, that was also around the time of the, well, maybe not around the same time, but, you know, remember the Santino incident? And you had two guys have total opposite careers. It's like the one that had all the potential sucks, and the one that sucks is fucking the one that's like one of the most over guys in the WWE.
Santino's so over that my son was asking me in the car just today, how do you do that thing that Santino does, the his thing where he hits the guy? And I said, the Cobra. And I showed him all the arm gestures so he knows how to do it. Eric Young and ODB defeated Sarita and Rosita, also in a steel cage.
Okay, well, I have a question because, you know, I hardly ever watch the show, but I always listen to the recaps of it.
Sure.
They always say the same thing. They say Eric Roberts can wrestle with the girls. Why can't Eric Roberts wrestle with the girls? They do it on Raw. They do it on SmackDown.
Eric Young. I don't. I think it. You called him Roberts for whatever reason. I want to say it was a thing with TNA that they actually did kind of an angle on Spike, but I'm not 100%. So, you know, I've been wrong before, but I'm not 100% on this one. But it's either that or it actually is a shoot thing.
They must have got mad when Sharkboy molested Chrissy Hemme on pay-per-view that one match.
I heard that the next match was the best match on the show. Jeff Hardy defeated Kurt Angle with a swanton off the top of the cage. They helped Kurt to the back, but it was only showed in the building, so Kurt's going to be taking some time off and not qualifying for the Olympics.
Dude, he wrestled last night, or Tuesday.
Yes, but not for the Olympics.
Yeah, but...
Well, they said he was taking time off, and by they, I mean Dave Meltzer, so...
Yeah, he took 2 days off. But
well,
I told you I was going to do the best match on the show. But I told you Kurt Angle
was
going to tear it up. Yeah.
Of course it was.
And of course, he almost killed himself, like always.
Yeah. And in the main event for the World Heavyweight Championship, Bobby Roode defeated James Storm.
And that's real quick to go back to Kurt Angle. Kurt Angle and cage matches, two things that should never be put together.
Agreed.
And he's going to jump off the damn thing no matter what.
Yeah, either somebody's going to land on him from very high or he's going to land on his knees from very high and he's going to kill himself.
Right.
So that was the lockdown pay-per-view from this last Sunday evening.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, you just mentioned the main event. We didn't talk about it. The main event... It sounds even stupider now than it did when they actually had the match, because if they wanted Bobby Roode to stay the champion, why didn't they just make this match a hair match? Since the dumbass is going to cut his hair anyway, and he could have cut his hair, have it meant something, have it built to a rematch because you know that Storm can beat him for the title, and they have the rematch, but instead they have him basically backdoor his way out of keeping the title. And then for some reason, he cuts his hair that he's always had long. And just for no reason.
Or why not just put the title on him and let him cut his hair and nobody would have cared either way. But I don't know. It was my impression that they were going to put the title on him. So, Lord knows.
Who knows? But, yeah, for some reason, Kazarian and Bobby Roode decided to cut their hairs. And they look nothing like they did before.
We also have
which is fucking crazy as shit, because didn't Kazarian get fired because he didn't want to cut his hair before?
That sounds familiar, but I can't say yes or no. That does sound familiar, though.
Yeah, when he was in the WWE, they asked him to cut his hair, and he said no, and that pretty much led to his departure from WWE. And now he just out of the blue cut his hair. Could have gone to Mexico for wrestle for 1 month and still ain't got a payoff. Some people are just stupid.
Yeah. Speaking of pay-per-views and the WWE, they've got one coming up here in the next couple of weeks. Extreme Rules. They have four matches announced thus far. You have Kane versus Randy Orton in a Falls Count Anywhere match. We have world champion Sheamus versus Daniel Bryan in a 2 out of 3 falls match. See, with 2 out of 3 falls,
they actually get to have a wrestling match.
Yes, 2 out of 3 falls, they have to at least have one. So,
hopefully.
Keep
you never know. You never know. It could be three flash pins. You know.
I hope not. We also have WWE champion CM Punk versus Chris Jericho, who recently got three staples in the back of his head in a house show match with CM Punk.
Mm-hmm. It should be a good match.
I think so. I think it'll steal the show myself. And the returning Brock Lesnar versus John Cena in an Extreme Rules match.
Hopefully they'll let Cena run wild for just a couple minutes, a few minutes, and then just have Brock kill him. Maybe one slight small comeback, but they gotta let Brock just destroy him, at least for the first match. You know.
Yeah, that would make the most sense. But
And they really think about keeping it short, and they really need to think about putting Punk Jericho at last, just because. You know what I mean? You actually want to keep this. You don't want to do a Triple H Scott Steiner match.
Yeah, that was no good.
Yeah. Because Brock hasn't wrestled. I mean, you know what I mean? He hasn't, you know. I'm sure he hasn't been training. I'm sure the Rock training or prepared is 10 times, you know, harder than Brock is. Brock's just going to go and just do what he naturally can, and which is, I'm sure it's still a lot and would look badass, but it's got to be. It's short. You can't have him be getting blown up in a 20-minute match.
Yeah, agreed. I think he needs to run through Cena and keep the feud going for a while, because it's going to be a while until next year's WrestleMania.
Yeah.
And with that said, I think it's time for you to call Mr. Bo James.
Okay. Are you sure you're going to be able to talk for like a couple minutes?
I'll do yourself.
Are you up to the challenge?
I'll be just fine. I'll start burying you. That's the easy way out. Call Bo.
Right, let's see here.
It's high comedy right here.
Why?
It always is.
All right, I'll be back in a couple minutes.
Okay. So a little bit of background for our listeners this evening. I first saw Bo James wrestle for Pinnacle Championship Wrestling here in Washington State. This is the group that ran out of a junkyard in Auburn, Washington. And I saw this big man in the ring, and he moved, and he was old school can be, and he was absolutely awesome. And a few days ago, he posted that he was looking to do interviews because he has a book out. And, of course, we'll ask him something about that. He's been all over the place and seems to be a heck of a nice guy. But, like I said, man, old school old school can get.
Great. Go ahead and introduce our guest, please.
Our guest tonight hails from Fall Branch, Tennessee, and has been in the wrestling business for the past 23 years. He has wrestled from ocean to ocean and from border to border and has recently written a book entitled, Do You Want to Be a Wrestler, Kid? Please welcome to the show, Bo James.
Hey, thanks for having me. Glad to be on.
How are you doing tonight, Bo?
Doing good. Just came in. Me and my nephew have been out putting 700 flyers on car windows all across town.
I take it you're doing a show sometime soon.
Yeah, we run a couple times a month, and them little flyers are the best last-minute reminders you can do. We're running Mount Carmel, Tennessee tomorrow, which is just a suburb of Kings Fork. It's just a mile and a half from the old Kings Fork Armory. They built the new Kings Fork Armory, but it's actually not in Kings Fork.
Now, your company, the shows you're putting on for, isn't it in a kind of in a way like started off in Smoky Mountain?
Well, we were here before Smoky Mountain was here. I started running. Actually, I started promoting towns for Ron West, who was the general manager of Continental Wrestling out of Alabama in Knoxville. They had two offices. They had one in Birmingham, one in Knoxville. That was one of the last territories that died out. When I was 14 years old, I started hanging posters and doing what I was doing today, going out and putting flyers out and selling tickets and merchandise for Ron West and the wrestlers of Continental. And they shut down in 89, and somewhere around the end of 90, we started talking about opening our own promotion. In February of 91, we promoted our very first event. We just celebrated our 21st anniversary this past February.
Wow. Cool. That's a long time, because a lot of promotions nowadays, they'll come up for a few years, and then unfortunately they're unable to make it. But that's a long time. That's something to be proud of in this day and age.
Yeah, I read a year or two back, I read a thing in a magazine that said most mom and pop businesses that opened up last 2 years. You know, and we're one of the last mom and pop organizations or businesses out there that still runs. We, like I said, we run at least twice a month, sometimes more than that. And of course, back in the 90s and heyday, we were running every weekend. I've ran as many as 16 towns in 1 month.
Wow, that's pretty good. Now, Teddy, could you go ahead and tell us about how you got your start into the wrestling? I'm sure you're a big Continental and a Mid Southern fan growing up.
I had two cousins that refereed and wrestled in the 60s and 70s, Melvin Johnson and Zach Murray. They worked for Nick Goulas and the Crockett family and a little bit in Georgia and a few other places. And I was a super fan and went to the matches. I grew up here in East Tennessee. We got to see Memphis TV, Crockett's TV, and, of course, Knoxville TV. So we had three hours of wrestling a week if you didn't have cable. And Crockett ran Kingsport, which is 12 miles from where I grew up. They ran there every other Sunday afternoon. Sometimes it was every third Sunday. And the Knoxville office ran Johnson City, which is 18 miles the other direction. They ran it every Tuesday night. So I went to the matches 4 to 6 times a month. And was always around, got to know a lot of wrestlers when I was a kid. And Davey Rich told Ronnie West, he said, hey, you ought to give this kid a job because he loves our business and he's always around. And next thing I know, I'm helping promote towns and put up a ring and selling programs and pictures and popcorn and tickets and whatever else it took just to be a part of, to be a part of wrestling.
How long did you do that before you actually started to want or get into the ring?
Probably, let's see here, October 88, I started helping Ronnie West, and sometime towards the end of 89 or somewhere around there, I started reffing. I'd helped another, after they had shut down, and even when they were still running, I was helping a little promotion here ran by Al Bass, and we were in a little town called Churchill, Tennessee one night, and he came over to me about 10 minutes before bell time and said, hey, do you think you could be a referee? And I was thinking, yeah, like when I grow up one day or something. He said, I mean, in 10 minutes. Because the referee was not there. So they threw me in the ring, and I guess I did a pretty good job because Al bought me my first referee shirt and started getting me booked. And, and I was 15 years old, and I was doing weekend shots every weekend. I was doing Friday and Saturday somewhere. By the time I was a junior in high school, I was doing 4 or 5 towns a week.
Wow.
Were you smartened up at the time,
No,
of a mark?
Nobody ever told me anything. The only training I have ever had for any job in professional wrestling was Al and a guy named Glenn Day, who wrestles as the Equalizer, pulled me off to the side and said, look, if they're on the floor, count to 10. If they don't get in the ring, ring the bell. If they're on their back, count to 3. If they're on the ropes, count to 5. That was it. And I worked, when I broke in, guys, the business was still very closed and very secretive. Mm-hmm. And I was in the ring, and nobody told me anything. Nobody smarted me up. I learned as I went.
Now, how long did it take you before you kind of realized how the wrestling business works?
Well, I don't know if I've even figured that out now. probably about a year. I did all these little small shows around here, and then Al and Glenn got me booked in Knoxville. And at the time, Knoxville was still a hotbed because you had Jimmy Golden was still, which he still lives there. Wendell Cooley was still there. Jeff Sword, Doug Vines, Izzy Slapowitz. The Mongolian Stomper, Rick Connors, who else? Johnny and Davey Rich, guys that had worked territories all over were still in Knoxville. So, you were working with guys that had been making a living at this for years and years and years. And one night in Lenoir City, Tennessee, Izzy Slapowitz and Jeff Sword and Doug Bynes said, "Hey, come here," because they were not happy with what I had done in the ring, and they pulled me off to the side, and they said, "Look, this is a dance. We lead, and you follow." And, you know, I don't know if you know much about the Devil's Duo, but looking at them two guys, you know, they're pretty scary guys, and I paid attention real fast. But they also took the time to help me and teach me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So did they train you to become a wrestler?
No, I've never had any training whatsoever.
Nothing?
Other than other than just being, you know, I ref for like 3 years, I guess, before I started wrestling. And, you know, I mean, it was different. I mean, and there's still a lot of towns run here. I mean, there's still guys that wrestle 200-plus times a year here in East Tennessee. So, you know, you got a lot of experience here. And if you're just around, you're going to pick it up, and you're going to learn it. If you pay attention, if you sit down, shut your mouth, and watch and listen, you're going to learn something.
Yeah. Like nowadays, people go to wrestling school for, like, you know, so many weeks or so many months. And like you say, you didn't have any as far as, like, going to a school, but you learned in the ring. How long do you think it took you to become, you know, to understand it and become a good worker?
Well, there's a lot of different aspects to that. You know, I learned a lot from different guys. Like, I had, you know, like I said, all those guys I named off, plus I worked a lot as a young guy with Ivan Koloff. I worked with Jimmy Valiant, Manny Fernandez, the Rock and Roll Express. So I had a lot of guys helping me, teaching me. You know, they'd pull you off to the side and say, "Listen, do this, do that." You know, and I worked with all those guys when I started wrestling. So, I mean, you're looking at all these guys were top guys in territories, some of them world champions. So if you didn't learn, it wasn't their fault. You were just an idiot. or you didn't want to learn. You know, and all you had to do was listen. Yeah. Just let them be like Greyhound, leave the driving to them.
Good analogy.
I think that's one thing that really hurts the wrestling business today is that, you know, they don't, since there's no more territories, there's not like, you don't have a lot of experienced guys to work with. Unfortunately, you'll have shows that most of these guys just came out of wrestling school themselves, and there's no one who really knows what they're doing.
That's because the people running the wrestling schools have never wrestled for a living. You know, if you want to be a lawyer, you're going to go to law school. If you want to be a doctor, you're going to go to medical school. If you want to be a mechanic, you're going to go to a trade school. You're going to learn from people who have decades of experience, who have made a living at this and are qualified to teach you something. But if you got, you know, Joe Blow down here at the end of the street that sets the ring up, and he wrestles on Saturday night with his buddies, and that's the only town he works, and he only wrestles with his buddies that are on the same level as he is, how are they going to learn? And how are they going to take? All they're doing is raping the business because they're taking money. And most of the time, they're not even taking money. They're just like, "Come on, I'll teach you." Well, they're not teaching you anything.
Yeah.
Just because they're in the ring doesn't mean they're smart. Just because they're main eventing Saturday night somewhere doesn't mean that they're a professional wrestler.
Mm-hmm. Very true. So who was like one of your mentors as you were coming up?
The biggest one was Jimmy Valiant.
Yeah.
I first met him when I was, you know, I was probably 7 or 8 years old when I first met him going to the matches. Mm-hmm. And then I've been making towns with him since I was 15 years old. I talk to him at least once a week, sometimes daily. You know, and I traveled with him, and he taught me how to live on the road and how to save money and live cheap and how to survive and how to make money. You know, then I had Bill Dundee. I've known Bill Dundee since I was 14 years old. And you know, he was a hero turned teacher turned friend. And I still talk to him almost, you know, a couple times a week. And you know, they helped me a lot. And I was a young guy. I got to work with a lot of people. And that's another thing that's missing. I work, you know, at 15 years old, on any given weekend, I could be in the ring with Wahoo McDaniel, Ivan Koloff, the Fantastics, the Rock and Roll Express, Robert Fuller and Jimmy Golden, the Mongolian Stomper, And the list went on and on and on. And I had all those guys worth all their years of experience to teach me, and I just take a little bit from each guy.
Now you mentioned Wahoo. I grew up watching Wahoo here in Texas. He was one of my favorites when I was a kid. And you always hear the stories about young guys when they wrestle Wahoo that they like to walk around without their shirts after the match to show off their battle scars. Basically, I was wondering, like, when you wrestled Wahoo or guys of that stature when you're first breaking in, was it like a badge of honor to be like chopped by Wahoo?
Well, I think it was a badge of honor from anybody at any stage to be hit by that man because, I'm going to tell you, he was a true legend in every aspect of our profession and an all-around world-class athlete, football player, wrestler, fisherman, golf. I mean, he could do anything, and he was one heck of a guy. I knew him for years and years and years. I've got a several-page tribute in my book about him. I talk about him in great details, and just a few short weeks before he died, he mailed me a huge package, and I opened it up, and it was a one-line letter said, "Hey, I thought you'd like to have this stuff," and he had sent me programs and pictures of him from all over the country.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, and you know, I got him locked in the safe here. I got one picture that hangs here in my office. I'm looking at it right now, of him and the headdress and the U.S. belt, and everything else is locked up, put up in the safe.
Cool. And what was it like working with Ivan Koloff?
Ivan was a true professional who could take anybody. He could literally take anybody with a heartbeat and get in the ring with him and have a match if they listened. And he could teach you when you didn't even realize he was teaching you. He was a machine. I mean, he was unbelievable to be in the ring with. He could fly, he could take backdrops, throw him off the top rope. When he came to town, he came to work. And that was one of the reasons we liked using him, because we knew when we paid him, we were going to get our money's worth in him.
Mm-hmm. And you also mentioned the Mongolian Stopper. What was it like to work with Eddie Goldie? Archie Goldie, I'm sorry.
He's another one as a machine. Every story you've ever heard about him doing the squats, riding the bicycle, you know, 50 miles a day and all that stuff, all that's true. And just a true gentleman, a great guy. I got to manage him around Knoxville one whole summer. I was his manager, and I think I was 17 years old. And I really learned how to be a heel watching him, being at ringside with him every night.
Yeah, I used to love his the thing he did. You know, he wore the headpiece because he could be like dominating the babyface, and then the fans would just get so loud they would actually like help the babyface by hurting the stomper. I just thought that was like one of the most ingenious gimmicks ever. I'm surprised they haven't done it again.
Yeah, just he could take the most simple thing, just grab it, like you said, just pound it on you. All he's doing is punching you. But he could take that and that open hand chop that he did to your head, and people were ready to riot. You know, he'd lay you out and milk that boot, and people knew that stomp was coming, and you would hear the oohs and ahs from the people before he ever kicked you.
Yes.
It's a lost art form. All those men that I just talked about, there'll never be anybody ever like them ever again.
Yeah, like Jimmy Garvin, the Boogie Woogie Man. I mean, you don't really see a guy who can be a serious, you know, main eventer who's like, you know, his thing is he dances. You know, and if he's getting beat up, he's dancing. If he's winning, he's dancing. I mean, and he was great at it, but you just don't see someone as unique as him anymore. Everyone's the same.
Right. That's the thing. Everybody there was different. Everybody looked different. Everybody was different size, different body. They talked different. They walked different. There was something for everybody to come see. It wasn't every match was the same, every wrestler looked the same, everything was different.
Mm-hmm. Now, go ahead, Craig.
I was just going to say, the title of your book is called Do You Want to Be a Wrestler, Kid? And I read on your website a little blurb about how you came up with that name. You want to share with our listeners how you came up with that name of your book?
Well, that's a one-line question that I repeat almost every week to some young wrestling hopeful out there. And I've heard it many times myself when I was a kid, and I ask myself many times a day, sometimes still, do I want to be a wrestler? But the first time that I ever really was asked the question, I was just a kid reffing, and the old-time wrestler in Knoxville by the name of Rick Connors, who was a legitimate tough guy. He won all kinds of tough men. He was a collegiate wrestler. He was an Army champion. He was a boxing champion, a judo champion. And he just drilled me one night and knocked me out cold. And as I looked up at him, he looked down and said, "Do you want to be a wrestler, kid?" And, you know, and it's a question that everybody in this business has to ask yourself one time or another.
Mm-hmm. Now, you just mentioned this guy was, like, pretty tough. Like, you hear stories from the territory that there was always one guy who, like whenever somebody wanted to come and become a wrestler or, like, try and be tough for wherever the wrestlers were working out, that they always...
That was Knoxville. That was Rick Connors. That's what he was in Knoxville. Most of the time, he didn't win. He did the training for the Knoxville office. He trained the Dirty White Boy, Doug Furness, Ron Sexton, Tim Horner, and countless other guys that went on to make money. And but if you saw him, he had big cauliflower ears, and he was an older guy when I started, and a lot of people didn't like to work with him because, oh, he's going to do that old wrestling because he could tie you up in a heartbeat.
Mm-hmm.
But he could teach you a lot of stuff, too.
Mm-hmm. Now, what actually made you decide to write a book?
I never really wanted to write a book. People told me for years because I got a pretty entertaining story, and I've been around to see a lot of stuff happen, a lot of changes and a lot of stuff. And, you know, people say, "You got to write this book." And I helped Jimmy Valiant write his book because I'm pretty much, you know, one of the wrestling historians for this area. And I helped him with anything he needed. He'd call me once a week and go, "Hey, kid, what year did this happen and who was involved?" And I helped him put his book together. And then Dutch Mantel, I helped him with a couple things in his book, just, you know, timeline-wise. And both of them told me I should write this book. And I said, "No, I don't want to write a book." Because I'd started writing just a few stories and putting on my Facebook and on my website. And, you know, I said, "No, nobody wants to read what I got to say." And then Dutch kept pushing me. And then a friend of mine by the name of Donnie Brannon, he come along. He's an editor. That's what he went to school to do. And he said, "I can help you do this, and we ought to do it." And I started writing a few stories and sending them to him, and he would put them, you know, edit them, put them together. And next thing we know, we had a book, and it's been out since September, and it's done real well. We sold just out of my house here off of my website. I've sent to about 30 states, and we've sent to 3 foreign countries.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah, and that's not counting what it's doing on Amazon. You know, it's on Amazon.com also. I've got a 5-star rating there.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
Nice.
Now, you've been wrestling for 20-something years. How do you feel about, let's say, the more mainstream wrestling like the WWE? A lot of, you know, guys have been around. They're not really high on the product. What's your opinion on it?
I don't watch it. I don't have an opinion. I couldn't, other than a few guys that's been around for, you know, several years, or, you know, a guy like John Cena where you see his T-shirts everywhere, I wouldn't know those guys if they walked up to me on the street.
I'm sure it would be no surprise to you to hear that when Jerry Lawler does wrestle, he's still one of the best guys on the whole roster.
Oh, yeah. He's unreal. He's the king for a reason.
Yeah. Now, did you ever work with the King? I know you're close to the Central States, but
I worked a few times in, you know, I was in and out a few times in the 90s in USWA a few weeks at a time, but I was in, I moved to Memphis in the fall of 97 and was back and forth from there to here, but all of 98 I stayed there and worked for Randy Hills and Lawler and Dundee and Power Pro Wrestling. And, you know, I got a several-week run where I was Randy Hills' goon under a mask, and I got to work with Jerry Lawler many nights a week. And, you know, it's something to be in the ring with him when he drops that strap and just listen to the people.
So could you just, like, talk about just working a whole match with Jerry Lawler? Because he's one of those guys where he should be out there for 20 minutes and not really do a whole lot, but, like, by the end of it, the people are going insane, and it's like they just saw the greatest match ever. He just is so good. I mean, what's it like just working that, like, a whole 20-minute match with Jerry Lawler?
Well, it's just him. You can do the same thing with Bill Dundee. You can do the same thing with Dutch Mantell. It's all those guys of that generation with that mindset of they went to the same towns 52 times a year and they worked a different match every week. And you never saw Lawler before you went to the ring. You know, I would see him when he came through the curtain just like the people. That's when I saw him.
Mm-hmm.
And as he got in the ring, you better know how to work with him. And I grew up watching the product and watching all those guys and, you know, just years of studying the business and watching it and being a super fan and then working with so many people for so many years, you know, you're either going to swim or you're going to sink. And if you sink, you're going to sink fast. You know, you're going to get one opportunity. And I got to work with him many times. I brought him here to Kingsport and teamed with him a few times. And I've always had a good professional relationship with him.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool.
Yeah.
What's one of your favorite stories from your book, Bo?
Oh, man. I don't know. My book, it's part history lesson. The first part about my childhood, it explains what was going on here in the territories and what we saw and what, you know, and then when cable expanded here to East Tennessee and we started seeing Georgia and different stuff. And then there's my life story of, you know, my ups and downs in the profession, being homeless, you know, two different times just so I could be a professional wrestler, going months and months without speaking to your family because, you know, they're all mad at you and they want you to change and do this and do that. And, you know, and living the lifestyle of what you think a wrestler should live like that has led many people down the road to you know, early deaths and everything else. And it's got a love story of my wife, Misty, who her stepdad used to be a ring announcer, and I met her when she was 9 years old. And when she was 13, she wrote me a letter and told me she was going to marry me one day, and I threw it in the trash and laughed it off. And, you know, here all these years later, we're married. And my book's got just a little bit there. I got a chapter on ribs. Road mm-hmm. stories, you know, from me and Ricky Morton being in a 40-car pile up in a fog up on Afton Mountain in Virginia to me and him being stuck for days in a blizzard. You know, my book's got a little bit of everything. It'll make you laugh. It'll make you cry. It'll make you think. And it will give mm-hmm. you a better understanding of what it takes to make a living in this business now.
Well, with that said, what was the best rib anybody's ever pulled on you personally?
Best rib ever pulled on me. I don't know. A lot of people don't. I rib a lot of people, and some people rib me back, but a lot of them don't rib me back. You know, I really can't think of, you know, Tom Pritchard is one of the best all-time ribbers, and I've got him a few times, and I'm still waiting for him to get me back, and I know he will one day. And
receipts in the mail.
Yeah, his ribs are pretty hardcore, and you know they leave a lasting impression. One of the best rib stories, and I don't want to give it away, but I will tell you, we got a guy. The whole story's in the book how it came about, but we got a guy to wear another wrestler's underwear after he had, you know, took a crap in him.
Oh,
and the guy never knew, and he walked around with the crappy underwear on.
Oh, Lord.
There's a few rib stories in the book that involve snakes, you know, finding snakes in, around the buildings and putting them in people's bags and cars, and, you know, that's always fun.
That sounds pretty crazy.
I grew up here in the mountains, you know. You know, every spring I've already found, you know, a snake out here in the yard. I live in the woods, so I've been around snakes all my life. They really don't scare me, and I can pretty much tell what's a black snake, what's a copperhead, what's a cottonmouth, and, you know, just by looking at them. But if you don't know that, you know, and you take a black snake that's 6 feet long and put it underneath somebody's car, and their driver's car, and they're going up the road, and it wraps around their leg while they're going up the road, it's a pretty scary experience for them. Ask Derek King about that if you ever have him on the show.
Now, I would imagine you had, like, a lot of long drives, so I'm sure your stuff like that was happening quite a bit.
Yeah, we still, me and my wife and some of the boys here that I've helped get started, we still travel. I mean, I've got, in May alone, we're going to Maryland, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, and West Virginia. We got some 8-hour trips. And, you know, when I was in Memphis, you stayed in Nashville, but you made Memphis and Louisville and Evansville and spot shows every week. You made Memphis twice a week. You went for TV and then turned around and come back to Nashville that night, plus you made Memphis on Monday. So, I mean, you could easily put 2,500 miles on the car. My longest trip ever was Pacific, Washington to Kinston, North Carolina. 42 straight hours.
Wow.
You drove that?
Yeah, I drove it.
He told me to fly you in for that?
No, every year we take a vacation, but I get booked. I just say, where you want to go, and then I'll find somewhere and get booked. And my wife had never been to Idaho or Portland or Seattle, and she wanted to go. And so we went out there, and I found the Pinnacle Group online, and I got a hold of Cecil and got booked. And so we left, like, on Monday. The show was on Saturday, but the following Monday night, or Monday or Tuesday, I was booked in Kinston on a county fair. So I left... As soon as I got my money from Cecil, we got in the car and I drove straight through to North Carolina and wrestled there, then turned around and drove 8 hours back.
That's right. Didn't you used to work for Pinnacle?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
When we would come out there to visit. Is Cecil still running? Is Pinnacle still going?
No, it's not, unfortunately.
Yeah.
There's about two indie groups here in the Seattle area right now, and they have to run out on the reservation. There's no, they kind of cracked out on the, with the commission out here. It's hard to run indie shows out here, unfortunately.
Well, it is and it's not. If you're not used to it and not doing it, yeah, it is. But coming from out here where we'll run anywhere, we can set up a ring and make some money. There's ways to find to do it, you know. That was the one thing that when I was in the Northwest, they only ran on Saturday nights. Nobody even thought, or they would be a Sunday afternoon show. Nobody ever thought of running Friday night, Thursday night, Tuesday night. Oh, you can't run during the week. Well, only, you know, Don Owens only did it for 70 years.
That's right. Yeah, the commission up here, they require you to have an ambulance and a full med staff on the premises now, and it's really hard to run indie shows out here.
Yeah, Pennsylvania does the same thing. You just got to sit down and make the phone calls to find somebody who's a wrestling fan. And that's my buddy Mike DiMuzio, who runs Pennsylvania, and I help him. I'll go up there a few times a year for him, and that's exactly what he did. He sat there and went through the phone book until he found a doctor who was a wrestling fan.
A true Mark doctor.
Yeah.
I love it.
Now, Bo, I have ask this question. What are your opinion? Like, there's a lot of controversy in the WWE and now in the UFC of guys using, you know, steroids, stuff like that. What kind of advice do you give the guys who are trying to make it in the business? Do you like tell them to stay away from the steroids, or like, what's your opinion just on, like, you know, young guys trying to use steroids to advance in the wrestling business?
Well, it's like this. How bad do you want it? And if you want it bad enough, that choice is going to be left up to them. Mm-hmm. If they're 190 pounds, they're not going to get a job. But if they're 230 and cut up, they're going to get looked at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what Vince is wanting right now.
But, I mean, that's a personal decision. That is a personal decision that they have to make. Somebody can't push it on them. They can point them in the right direction, where to find it, where to get it, which it ain't hard.
Yeah.
I would imagine.
Especially around wrestlers.
Yeah. You know, there's not too many, you know, states that you can't find it in.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, my goal was never to go to the WWF or anything else. You know, I grew up super fan. I wanted to wrestle in the Carolinas, Alabama, Tennessee, because that's what I grew up watching. And I've got to work the Mid-South Coliseum, the Louisville Gardens, the National Fairgrounds, and you know, many of the buildings I grew up watching, seeing. My only goal from day one is the same goal that it is now, that's to make a living. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to be there to make a living. And I'm proof of that. 24 years, I've made a living at this. I've bought a home with this. I bought every car, every piece of clothing, every meal. Everything has been paid with wrestling money.
That's pretty good.
Good on you.
Craig, do you have any final questions before we start to wrap up?
Actually, I was just going to go ahead and plug Bo's website. If you go to www.kingofkingsport.com, you can check out Bo's website. He's got ordering information on his book, along with a couple of DVD sets, one on Bill Dundee. And,
yeah, I want to plug that real fast. That is a project that me and Bill worked over this winter. It's three discs, 6.5 hours. And that Bill Dundee's book and that DVD set came from reading other people's books that did not tell the truth. And me and Bill spent one solid week sitting here in my home watching his career from some stuff that he had from Australia and a few other little things, but then I had pretty much everything from the time he got to America up to now. And we sit here and watched hour upon hour upon hour of his career, and then we spent 3 days shooting the interview, and we pretty much go month by month, year by year through his career. And there are stories in there from about people that you forgot about, you never heard of, or people that you grew up idolizing. And then he handpicked Bill himself from his collection, my collection. He handpicked the matches, the interviews, and the angles that we show. And it is the most in-depth shoot interview that you will ever see with anybody.
Cool. Sounds great.
That sounds very cool. So check that out. Again, one more time, it's kingofkingsport.com. Of course, you can get that DVD set along with Bo's book, Do You Want to Be a Wrestler, Kid? And also check out some flyers for his upcoming show. He's running Southern States Wrestling on April 20th, 8 p.m. at the Armed Service Center Armory in Mount Carmel, Tennessee.
So, Bo, I want to thank you for taking the time to hang out with us for such a long time. We really appreciate it. And do you have any final things you'd like to tell our listeners?
Well, I just appreciate everybody that's ever come to see me or ever bought a picture of me or a DVD or a book or anything else because, you know, the Lord has blessed me to make a living for 24 years in this profession, and it's all came from wrestling fans. I grew up a fan, and I've tried for 24 years to keep at least what I'm doing as close to what it was when I was a kid, you know, because it got far away from that over the years, but... Wrestling still is alive and well in East Tennessee, and Southern States Wrestling still gives you old-time professional wrestling.
Very cool.
Well, thank you, Bo. You have an awesome night.
Yeah, thank you, guys. Y'all take care of yourselves.
You too. Thanks, Bo.
All right, bye.
What a nice guy. Are you still with us, Ed? Hello?
Hello. Somehow I got disconnected, and Craig is freaking out and has been calling back and forth before I could put in our callback or our code number in. So hopefully Craig will call back momentarily, and hopefully Katrina. Okay, here's Craig. Hey, Craig, are you there? I'm sorry, I got disconnected there for a second.
Oh goodness, I thought the whole show was going to the pot. Of course,
no, I mean you could have you're actually still on the air even though I wasn't, so you could have like carried the show,
goodness.
But. You got scared and you choked, and I saw you hang up like two or three times. But
what are you fucking up the show for?
What?
What's that?
Why are you fucking up the show?
That was Craig. I've been Craig.
I didn't have control of the you know the keyboard there.
Switchboard. There wasn't nobody on.
I'll admit to what happened. I was actually I was actually getting ready to push disconnect on Bo. and he hung up right before I disconnected. So when I disconnected, I disconnected myself.
Oh.
But we're back
Thanks,
on the air. Everything is all good. Excuse me.
How long were you on hold? Did you actually listen to any of the interview?
Yeah, I put it on my computer. I didn't call in because I didn't know what y'all had asked or whatever, so I didn't want Ed to put me on the spot. Plus, he talked about Jimmy Valiant, and Ed embarrassed me because he's a friend of mine.
Well, we did get to talk a little bit about
Jimmy
Valiant.
What do you think about that?
I'm sorry, what?
I said Ed would say something like, Contreras here thinks Jimmy Valiant sucks. What do you think about that?
That would have been an awful question.
That would have been a horrible question. Anyway.
Well, I thought it was good energy.
Yeah, it's crazy. So, he's not like, he's like one of those guys you've kind of heard the name. Like, even Contreras was like, I know that name from somewhere. Just been wrestling all of his life, and I don't want to discredit anything he's done, but you know, never really hit it big, and still making a living 23 years later. That's crazy to me.
There's like a lot of guys from the South that have been able to do stuff like that, like George South. Like we had Yoko Sumoff, a few weeks ago. You know, it's mm-hmm. like they're not the richest guys in the world, but I mean. They can, when you can actually make a living, and that's pretty much that's what you do, is you're a full-time wrestler, promoter, whatever. I mean, you don't have to go to a 9-to-5 job. I mean, it's actually pretty good. I mean, there's not a lot of guys that can do that,
No, I'm surprised Buddy Wayne still sustains himself, working in the wrestling business all these many years later.
Mm-hmm.
So, it can be done.
Like a lot of the young guys, even like the guys who are actually the indie guys who actually do make somewhat money as far as like their payoffs, like Roderick Strong, when he's not wrestling, he's doing a personal trainer thing. Kenny King, when he's not wrestling, he's a Chippendale. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like it's very hard to be a full time pro wrestler when that's all you do, and when you can do it for 20 something years, I mean that's
that's awesome.
Like wrestling has always played good in the South. Some reason.
Yeah, you could never do that out here, even in Portland anymore. I don't think you could pull that off.
Yeah. But I guess we could go ahead and if you want, we could go back to the news.
Sure thing. I will go back to the news. We have Dean Ambrosia is going to be debuting.
Ambrosia? What's he?
Sorry.
Dessert?
Yes, he's like a salad. Let me try that again. Dean Ambrose to debut in Angle with Mick Foley. Dean Ambrose will be debuting.
Ambrosia for dessert.
Dean Ambrose.
Isn't that like a drink? Isn't it like with the drink of the like God in the Greek time?
I think it's fruit salad, actually.
Yeah, something like that.
Anyway, Dean Ambrose will be debuting shortly in an Angle with Mick Foley designed to make him someone right off the bat. The two have been doing an internet feud which started with a supposed camera phone recording and altercation over WrestleMania weekend where the two got into an argument where Ambrose blamed Foley for his style causing so many people injuries who never made it in wrestling. Later they escalated the storyline to where Foley either did or didn't have Ambrose sent home from TV. With Ambrose claiming Foley had him sent home and Foley claiming he didn't directly do it, but was happy that it happened. Dean Ambrose.
Apologize. Who is that? Who is that?
It's
what, Dean Ambrose?
Yes.
John Moxley? Is that who that is?
Yeah, it's John Moxley.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
I saw that video they did at WrestleMania. He's a hell of a talker.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the stuff he did in Dragon Gate, I mean, was so different than Dragon Gate stuff. But saw a couple of great extreme rules matches that he did, one with Jimmy Jacobs and then one, was it Tommy Dreamer that he wrestled in Phoenix?
I don't know.
Adam, talking to you.
Just...
Wait,
what?
You with us?
I was actually sending a text, but what, could you repeat that?
Yeah. John Moxley, he wrestled Dreamer in Phoenix, is that correct?
Yeah, he wrestled Dreamer, and he had Christina Von Erie in his corner,
Erie.
And he's got good size. He's a tall dude.
Yeah.
You know, he was, you know, even way taller than Dreamer. You know, Dreamer's not the biggest dude, but he's a big dude, you know. Maybe not compared to the giants in the WWE, but he's got good size. He's got a good look. I wasn't really all that impressed with the match. I think a lot of those, I was pretty much burnt out. And I kept hoping that they do a spot where Dreamer would power drive Christina Von Erie and she'd get stuck in her spikes in the ring. But unfortunately, that didn't happen. But, he's got the look. It's just, and he's not that bad, so, you know, he might do all right.
Yeah, that video I saw with him and Mick Foley going back and forth, that was some good stuff, some of the best stuff Mick's done in, like, years, it seems, since he's only been doing, like, stupid comedy stuff. Although, at WrestleMania, you know I popped for that backstage skit.
Yeah, me too. I ain't gonna lie.
I kept putting it off watching it, and I still haven't seen it.
Oh, with the Deadliest Catch guy?
Yeah.
Yeah, I popped.
You were there.
Oh,
you're talking
about horrible.
Oh, you're talking about that? I thought you were talking about the thing he did with Ambrose that wasn't at WrestleMania. That was kind of like...
It's on there. It's on the WWE site. Speaking of Dean Ambrose coming in this week, our three- or four-time guest, Claudio Castagnoli, will be making his debut on SmackDown with one William Regal.
Which is, that's actually pretty cool, and I'm excited, but... you know, I wish they would have had a little more build-up. You know, the more build you have, the more people will react to him sooner, you know. So
yeah.
I'm hoping I'm just throwing him out, you know, cold turkey. But, you know, I mean, all the best to Claudio. I mean, he's such a awesome dude, let alone an awesome worker. I mean, you know, I mean, I hope nothing but the best for Claudio.
Yeah.
Who is the Antonio Cesaro? Is that his name?
Yes.
Yes, that's his name.
Antonio Cesaro, not Ambrosia.
What's Chris Hero's name down in FCW? It was something weird.
Hero
like Wong Fu or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, I can't remember his name in FCW.
I know Chris Hero's got another kind of a dumb name, too.
Anyway, moving along. Next headline reads, Shane Douglas starting a new extreme wrestling promotion. Shane Douglas' latest attempt to start an ECW revival promotion called Extreme Reunion debuts on the 28th of this month in Philadelphia at the National Guard Armory with Douglas versus Sabu in the main event billed as The Night the Line Was Erased. I don't know what to think about that. ECW's match of that kind, this is written very badly, I'm sorry. It was 18 years ago that the line was crossed with Sabu versus Shane Douglas versus Terry Funk in a three-way match that went to a 60-minute draw in Philadelphia. Other matches on the show are Jerry Lynn versus Justin Credible, Al Snow, our favorite guest, versus C.W. Anderson, Little Guida and Tony Mamaluke versus Tracy Smothers, Stevie Richards and the Blue Meanie, and a mystery partner, Raven versus Pitbull Gary Wolf, Balls Mahoney versus Axel Rotten. He's going to be hurt in that match. Plus Two Cold Scorpio, Sandman, New Jack, Mustafa, Danny Doring, Joel Kirtner. Love that.
We'll probably fill the show.
Ring announcers Bob Ortiz and Stephen DeAngelis and referee Mike Kerr. That's basically all the whole
did
roster.
Did you say Little Guida? Is Guido doing an MMA thing now or something?
It says Little Guido.
You said Little Guida. That's why I asked.
Oh.
I see. Little Guido.
That would be awesome if Clay Guida showed up the rest of the UCW reunion show.
He would be awesome.
That was great. Anyway, he vomited.
That was disgusting.
When the vomited?
Paul's Mahoney after he wrestled Marty Jannetty. He vomited.
You haven't seen that?
No, I haven't.
Go look that up, just because.
Are you guys friends with Marty on Facebook?
No. I'm saying.
Marty, oh, I am.
Oh. Yeah, Marty has issues.
You don't say.
Yeah. I'd love to have him on the show, though.
Oh, yeah. And I've asked him numerous times, and there was one time when he agreed, and then I reminded him, and he goes, what are you talking about? And I just, okay, I don't want
to
say
he's anything. One you wouldn't need to promote on the show.
Yeah. If he's here, he's here.
Keep asking, Craig. Keep asking.
There's no Tommy Dreamer on the show as he's living up to his word about never doing another ECW reunion show after TNA Hardcore Justice pay-per-view in 2010.
Good for him.
Yeah, good for him.
It's ECW.
That main event,
to give up the ghost on this bullshit.
That main event with Douglas and Sabu, I just saw Sabu WrestleMania weekend wrestle for Dragon Gate, and to say he's a shell of his former self would be a stretch. He's not looking good lately.
Those old ECW guys, they come off worse than, like, the Valentines and the Beefcakes still working, you know?
Yeah.
I just, I don't know. They always say in the 90s, we're not going to be doing this shit. We're 50 like Ric Flair and Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, not so much.
Yeah.
Our last story for the evening is a match listing for the Best of the Clash of the Champions DVD, which is actually coming out May 22nd. We have Sting versus the Nature Boy Ric Flair from March 27th, 1988. This is their World Heavyweight Championship match.
Probably the best example of making a guy. As good as an example. Wouldn't you say?
It was a great match.
Probably the most famous match in the Clash of the Champions history, I'd say.
And Ed's not paying attention.
I'm sorry. I just had some text I had to send you.
It was the main event of the first live show Turner ever did on TBS, and it was the main event of the last live show Turner ever did on TNT.
That's true. We also have Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard versus Lex Luger and Barry Windham in a World Tag Team Championship match from March 27th of 1988. Same show, actually.
Yeah.
Another Tag Team Championship match with Arn and Tully versus Sting and Dusty Rhodes. A Russian chain match with Ricky Morton and Ivan Koloff from September of 1988.
It's doing something.
He is.
I'm sorry. I'm having an important text conversation. It's just it can't be helped. I apologize.
I think you're doing that thing that I talked about in the description of last week's show.
I'm not smoking right now. I was actually about to leave, but my plans kind of got changed, so I'm kind of but I'm working.
Well,
it's been a really weird weekend this past. It's been fucked up. I can't talk about it. But anyway, those all sound like awesome matches.
Well, there's even more, Ed. An I Quit match with Nature Boy Ric Flair versus Terry Funk from November of 1989.
See, that's worth the price right there.
Absolutely. We have the infamous Mil Máscaras match with Cactus Jack from February of 1990, where he takes a flat back bump off of the apron to the floor and destroys himself.
Cactus Jack doesn't have the best win-loss record in the NWA. You know why I think that is, Jim? He's just like a guy like Dr. Death. He needs guidance. He has all the skills and all the ability. Cactus Jack just needs somebody to tell him which direction to go in. Right now, Máscaras out on the floor. Hey, Cactus Jack could be setting him up for that big elbow. We've seen him do it before. The elbow right off the apron of the ring. He's setting him up for it, but Máscaras doesn't look stunned. Wait, Máscaras gets back in the ring. Cactus Jack doesn't know he's there. What in the world? Cactus Jack is dead. He's done it this time. I've never seen anything like that.
His head just smacked that concrete. He was away from the mat.
That's a concrete floor fan. He went 10 feet out onto the concrete. No human being could get back up after that. But he's doing it. There was no mat there. He fell right on the back of his head in the concrete.
And he should be happy that he got to wrestle in a match with a Hall of Famer and not bitch about it.
Oh, jeez. Oh, goodness. We have a U.S. Tag Team Championship match with the Midnights versus the Rock and Roll Express from June of 1990. United States Championship match, Nature Boy Ric Flair versus Lex Luger from September of 1990. The Young Pistols and Z-Man versus the Fabulous Freebirds from June of 91. A 15-man battle royal from September of 91. A match that I have a perverse desire to see. WCW United States Championship match with Sting versus Ravishing Rick Rude.
That was a good match. That was when Sting had to go to the hospital. And Luger attacked him earlier in the show or something. And hurt his knee.
Okay.
Do you remember that?
Personally, absolutely not.
It was on the show when Ricky Steamboat came back and teamed with Dustin Rhodes and won the tag team titles.
Okay.
I remember that.
Because when Paul E. was forming the Dangerous Alliance, Rude was winning the title.
Okay. You know what my whole favorite moment of that whole Dangerous Alliance thing was, and Rick Rude was, you remember the Dangerous Alliance was kind of out cutting a promo? And Sting and the baby faces all kind of came out, and Sting called him a bitch.
Yeah, they bleeped it.
Yeah. That was like one of the most awesome things they ever did on that TV show, dude. I mean, it was like you're watching it like, what the fuck? I mean, because it was like the rowdiest thing Sting ever said. I mean, it was the rowdiest thing Sting ever said. It was like, I mean... I don't want to say it seemed like a shoot, but it was just so different at the time. It was like, it really made you, I was like, wow.
Flip out so much that he tore his shirt off and went in the ring and went nuts.
That was awesome. That was an awesome period. I mean, I love that Dangerous Alliance period. I mean, I don't think I don't know how like a lot of people view it overall as compared to other eras, but I thought that was really, really good.
Well, nowadays you ask people about it, they say, well, the business sucked then. Well, I didn't care about what the business was doing. I was watching TV.
Oh, I know. I was watching Steve Austin going against Dustin
Rhodes
and Barry Windham and Arn Anderson. And, I mean, just
there was some
awesome shit. Bobby King had an awesome little run as a single right before the Dangerous Alliance. Or was it right after? But, I mean.
And I love that Bill White there. Fuck Mark Madden for getting him fired.
It wasn't Mark Madden. It was freaking that goddamn best baseball player, dude. It was Hank Aaron.
That's because Mark Madden faxed in my interview. Bill Watts did. That's why that happened.
Yeah. Damn, Mark Madden's stooge, and then the black man got Bill Watts fired. Doesn't he know that Bill Watts is a friend of the black man, and he pushed the black man to numerous titles and top spots in the business, and gave a black man the first booker and pro wrestler, and got him fired for being racist.
Yeah, just because he didn't want to. If he owned a restaurant, he didn't think he should have to serve blacks and queers. That's what he said.
I know. Moving along, we have a 2 out of 3 falls match with Nature Boy Ric Flair and Arn Anderson versus the Hollywood Blondes. From June of 1993, one of my favorite matches, Brian Pillman versus Stunning Steve Austin, November of 1993.
Yeah, so they broke them up.
Yeah. WCW
well,
television.
Hogan coming in after that, right? They'd have killed him off anyway. So that was just true.
Yeah. And then,
Jumping the gun.
Steve was done as soon as he lost the freaking Hacksaw.
And thank God they got rid of Steve Austin.
No doubt.
It's like some of the stupidest things ever done, or like things that actually really needed to happen.
Yeah.
Agreed. A WCW television title match with Lord Steven Regal against Dustin Rhodes from January of 1994. elimination tag match with Sting and Ric Flair versus Ravishing Rick Rude and Vader. And a championship unification match, Sting versus Ric Flair from June of 94.
Yep, right when Hogan was coming in.
WCW United States Championship match, Stunning Steve Austin versus Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, August of 94. From January of 1996, Hogan and Macho Man Randy Savage against Ric Flair and the Giant. Ooh, this looks good. Medusa versus Bull Nakano from August of 96.
Were you going to say Balls Mahoney?
No, I was going to say Bull Nakano.
Oh.
Although I am tongue-tied. It must be a Thursday thing. Match for the Battle Bowl ring, Diamond Dallas Page versus Eddie Guerrero, August of 96. WCW World...
Page's first big feud where he actually looked pretty decent.
Wait,
WCW...
that again?
I said that was Page's first big feud where he actually looked pretty decent.
Which one?
The one with Eddie Guerrero.
Yeah. It's so weird because, like, you know, remember when he first started, he sucked so bad, dude. And then, by the time they did that thing with the Outsiders, he was, like, you know, just awesome. I mean, you know.
That's another thing about having a kick-ass finisher. That's part of the reason. That's one of the reasons Randy Orton's so over. He's got that RKO. Same with like Jake Roberts and the DDT.
A lot of people are gonna shit on what I'm about to say, but same thing with Shawn Michaels.
Mm-hmm.
Shawn Michaels, you can add a lot of his career to the super kick. If Shawn Michaels was still doing that stupid side German suplex they gave him at first, he would not be.
That was horrible.
We'd all still think he's awesome, but he wouldn't have done half the career that he had.
Yeah.
WCW World Tag Team Championship Triple Threat Match, Harlem Heat versus the Steiner Brothers versus Sting and Lex Luger from August of 96. Another awesome match.
What were their names? Was it Booker T and Stevie Ray or Kane and Cole?
It was Booker T and Stevie Ray. They gave up their slave names years before.
I remember when they were the Ebony Express and I don't know, was it
Global?
Still Global at the time? Yeah, it was still Global. And Bradshaw was there, and they were there.
I think Sid Vicious got him hired at WCW because he worked Global a bit for a couple matches.
Well, they were good. I mean, you saw the potential that they had. I mean, those two guys were so far above everyone else in Global at the time.
I thought Steve Ray
they were just
Global.
Breaking in.
We have a WCW Cruiserweight Championship match, Ultimo Guerrero versus Dean Malenko from January of 97.
Who?
Ultimo Dragon? Did I say Guerrero?
Ultimo Guerrero.
He never wrestled for WCW. What are you talking about?
Ultimo Dragon versus Dean Malenko from January
of 97. Was Ray Bucanero there too?
No, Ed, he was not. A WCW Cruiserweight Championship match, Chris Jericho versus Eddie Guerrero, August of 97. I'm sure that's phenomenal. Dallas Page and Lex Luger versus Scott Hall and Macho Man Randy Savage, August of 1997. There's also some Blu-ray content that will be exclusive. We have Nature Boy and Barry Windham versus Midnight Express from December of 88.
That was a great match. Just watched that the other day.
So you're going to have to get the Blu-ray. Sting and Ricky the Dragon Steamboat versus Ravishing Rick Rude and Steve Austin, January of 92. And the Thunder Cage match, Dustin Rhodes and Sting versus Big Van Vader, Paul Orndorff, and Barry Windham from January 1993. I have no recollection of this match at all.
It was one where Cactus Jack became babyface.
That helps. Okay.
I remember him going babyface. I just can't remember exactly what happened.
Remember, they had the Rick Rude was out with an injury, like arm or back injury, I think it was, or neck injury or something. He injured something. And they had a spot open, so they were going to have, like, I think it was Paul Orndorff was going to face Cactus Jack, and the winner got to be on, like, the Vader's team. And so
During the match, something happened. Harley Race was out there, and Cactus Jack attacked Harley Race, and then Orndorff and Vader double-teamed Cactus Jack and, you know, pretty much killed him. So that was like, kind of like the start of a babyface turn. And so he came out, and then they did a thing earlier in the night. Ron Simmons was supposed to be on the team with Sting and Dustin Rhodes, but he got laid out, so it was 2-3. So Cactus Jack came out there with the bolt cutters and in the cage, and I think hit Orndorff with the bolt cutters and then got the pin for the Sting and Dustin Rhodes team.
Okay, I remember that. That's a lot of good shit on that DVD set.
Yeah.
Near the end, like in 97, those clashes became like useless.
Yeah.
I mean, look. I noticed this in like 1996, and just look at the live TV they had during 1 week. They had like the Hog Wild pay per view they did on a Saturday night.
Those are always horrible too, man.
Yeah. But they also have WCW Saturday Night, so they did 2 live hours of WCW Saturday Night before the pay-per-view, so they did 5 live hours of TV that day. Then they went to Monday Nitro, where they did 2 hours, and then they had to do a clash on Thursday. That just sounds obnoxious.
The only good thing is they had so many people under contract at the time that they, you know,
well, yeah, they flew everybody in, even if they weren't working the fucking show, and they went away out of business.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know how I'd buy that 3 hours of Nitro every Monday. If it was today, it'd be too much for me.
Oh, yeah. It was too much back in the day, but we sat through it.
That's just obnoxious, having a live 3-hour show weekly. That's just arrogance there, I think.
And then to counteract that, they threw on Thunder.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like I said, that's it for the news, fellas.
How do you like the Brock from on Monday night?
I thought that awesome. Brock thing was awesome. It was fucking awesome. It was like I was watching a UFC countdown or something.
Yeah, something completely different that they don't do anymore, and if that thing sells, you know, another 1,000 buys, they should do it for every pay-per-view they put on from here on out.
Yeah. The guy who makes this, if this pay-per-view gets money, they need to start giving this guy a little more projects and a little more stuff to do, because he did an awesome job on it. I mean, he really captured the feel. It's one thing that they actually might have a chance to do is, you know, when UFC got big, they got big because they lost, they stole some wrestling fans. The wrestling fans got tired of the product and kind of wanted something more real. And, you know, some people would disagree with me, but I think that UFC has kind of hit a peak. And, you know, their paper roots, their biggest fight of the year, well, I don't know if it's going to be the biggest fight of the year, but what should be their biggest fight, because it's their main title, is this Saturday. And it might not even beat the WWE's WrestleMania domestically for this show. So, I mean, pay-per-views are down. They're oversaturated. They're on a channel no one can get. I mean, a lot of bad press with a lot of bad shit. You know, Brock Lesnar, and then them starting to do these more reality-based, like, vignettes kind of a thing to actually bring those fans back to wrestling.
I have to disagree with you.
Didn't they show something like the R-Truth skits, which whoever thought of that should have his ass fired. That was like some of the most unfunny. Usually I'm not bothered by bad WWE comedy, but that was just some blatantly unfunny. It was just, God.
Yeah, it was dumb. It was dumb.
Horrible.
Now, why are you going to disagree with me, Craig? Tell us why you're wrong.
Okay, I'll tell you why I'm wrong, Ed. A lot of people that I work with have been nothing but talking. They've been doing nothing but talking about the pay-per-view this weekend and how they're absolutely stoked to see the pay-per-view this weekend. People that just, you know, oh, I saw this promo and this guy, blah, 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 and who's this guy? And there's a lot of interest in the show this weekend, and I think it's going to do very well.
We'll see.
It was like we did a show on his fucking Twitter going off about how TNA Impact is better ratings than Ultimate Fighter. And, like, that's something to brag about when pay-per-views bring in, like, what, $800,000 or 800,000 buys or something like that? Around that.
Yeah.
They need something to brag about, basically. They need something to make themselves look good.
Something to brag about if you actually know about the business. TNA would have to pay $800,000
to watch
the
most of the people reading that Twitter or whatever aren't, honestly, I think a lot of them aren't hardcore. They don't understand, and they actually think it actually is an accomplishment.
TNA would have to pay 800,000 people to buy their pay-per-views to get that kind of a
show. You know what's always been so weird is wrestling has always got better ratings than UFC, but then, you know, for the past few years or a couple of years, UFC has made more money in pay-per-view. Whereas, like, the ratings
different.
Have never,
I mean,
it's always,
like
the ratings are such a big landslide and a difference, and then, but then the pay-per-view buy rates is the same thing, just the opposite way.
And, like, with Ultimate Fighter, it is different because it's not like it's a – I mean, it covers, like, one part of UFC. I mean, it's not like Raw, which covers, you know, like, all of WWE, so you can follow it each week.
Yeah.
I don't have to really watch Ultimate Fighter to know what's going on, really. I mean, in UFC.
I watched the first 15 minutes of the first Ultimate Fighter, and I haven't seen anything more of it since.
Agreed.
And have no real desire to see the live show because it's like you took away the aspect that made the show good. It was, you know, honestly, it wasn't the fight.
Well,
it was the reality bullshit. It was Judy Browning going crazy. It was Dumbass going home because his girlfriend missed him. It was, you know,
Chris Lee even getting sprayed with the hose and going crazy and punching the window.
Yeah, you know.
That's why I watched that shit. Fuck that fighting shit. I want to see shit in the house. I want to see people acting like assholes and getting drunk.
Yeah, they took that aspect away because you can't really get that much out of, like, you know, you're taping and showing shit from that week. It's not like you can have weeks of plan and you can manipulate shit. You can make what you can't make. Who's one of the coaches? You can't make Dominic Cruz say this is why you haven't made it your business yet. Every episode, you know what I mean? You don't have Uriah Faber telling him this is why he hasn't made it, you know, to every single person, even though he never said it.
Well, hopefully if they did have him say that, then they would at least tape them saying it each time instead of running the same one over and over again.
Right.
Ultimate Fighter, well, I kind of got off of Ultimate Fighter, like, I think I watched, I just stopped watching for some reason. It's got to be such a chore to watch, I guess. When a show gets to be a chore to watch, I just stopped watching and deleted from the TiVo.
Yes, much like the show that's on top of this.
Hold on, right now. We're down to the last 2 minutes of live air. For everyone, check out angrymarks.com. You can always download and stream our show at angrymarks.com along with a lot of other shows. And, you know, everyone check out angrymarks.com. I think I almost got yelled at today. And I'm going to blame you, Craig.
Okay.
Because I get a message saying something about, why are you doing the show tonight? You're supposed to do the show on Friday. And I had a comedy say, it's fine, Steve. You'll just play it on Angry Marks as usual. It doesn't affect anything. So I guess I calmed the person down, and I didn't get yelled at. So
you have to remember,
independent wrestlers work on the weekends.
So we have to be available.
Yeah, that's what I mentioned. I go, you know, sometimes our guests, you know, can only do it on Thursdays, and it'll still air the same way, so it doesn't affect. I think they thought we were trying to bump the Angry Mark show itself tonight, but, you know.
Our ratings don't go down or up or whatever, but just because it's a live show, like some knothead on the board was saying the other day, they changed the fucking Raw and tape it. No, they only did that every week. They were like in 98 when they were like making shitloads of money. And you're getting the same audience each week and had a tape show every other week, dipshit.
Right. Right.
Yeah. So, do we
and
have
Rodney,
any other
get on the radio show and talk like that again. I thought Nancy had a disease and was dying or something on Brian and Vinny last week.
No, he's alive and well and doing fine.
Well, he never talks. He never gets on the show, so I was worried there for a second. And you know the way he talks in the first place, it's kind of low key. So
yeah,
worried.
Yeah.
Well, hey, I don't think we got anything else. Let's call it a night.
Well, this is that. Just up to you to decide. I'm asking you. I guess you don't have anything to say, but Contreras, do you have anything to say?
No.
What?
Me?
No.
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 That's a surprise. You usually have. You usually never shut up.
Right. Well.
I guess we'll be. Well, either. I guess we should be back to our normal time next week, and we will have a whole lot of other stuff to talk about next week. And hopefully this weekend won't be as crazy as last weekend. And
Greg's not going to be on here next week.
What?
Greg, you're not going to be on here next week?
No, I'm going to I'm going to actually drag myself down and watch TNA Impact. Well, not Impact itself, but I'm going to be watching
Impact Wrestling.
Yes, at a house show here.
TNA Impact Wrestling. We don't know what the fuck to call it. Just go to the show.
Well, here's the thing. We're not allowed to call it TNA in my house because of my son. When he's 5 years old and he says TNA, my wife goes, "Oh, it's something else," because TNA and a 5 year old. And if he goes to school and say, "Yeah, we watched TNA last night," it's going to raise an eyebrow or two. So we call it Impact at my house.
Well, hey, if there's any way you can get TNA banned from your house, that's the way to go. It's a good reason.
Cool. Well, I really don't have too much to say other than if I run across a certain individual again, you'll be lucky if you're still alive after I see you. And other than that,
okay.
I will end the show on this. If I can find a damn audio clip like I can never find.
Be the man! You gotta beat the man!
You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the mountain shit! Let's go hook him up!
I'm gonna drag you until I wear your Texas ass out every day. The game is awesome.
And hell, I might even get on top of my wife tonight.